to bring in more foreign investors to help bring more liquidity to the system because they're trying to offer yield to a yield-hungry investing world.
So if we take the Saudi market, it is by far the largest and most liquid market, not just in the Gulf region, but in the broader Middle East region. So we can readily see the Saudi capital market playing a role as the de facto gateway to the region, not just for foreign investors, but also for issuers.
Wilbur Ross, he is expected to receive approval for Commerce Secretary. Ross is expected to be a key player on trade policy when he formally takes office. A wealthy businessman turns 80 years old in November.
By banning people from seven predominantly Muslim countries from entering this country, do we make it easier or harder to fight the war on terrorism?
Well, I think it's very hard to fight the war on terrorism if we're in retreat. It's going to be hard to defeat them. If that's the goal, to defeat ISIS, which I believe it should be, that we project strength.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Tuesday. It's February 28th, 2017, 5:10 in the morning. Glad to have you along for another edition of The Opening Bell, another business day. Lots going on today. A big joint session of Congress later. President Trump will give his first joint address talking about tax reform and some of his plans for the economy, undoubtedly. That's sort of what spurred the markets on yesterday on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Right now, Dow futures are looking mixed, mainly negative. NASDAQ futures are off about 3. S&P futures are off about a point. Dow futures off about 6 points. World markets this morning generally higher, coming off those all-time highs yesterday, a fourth straight month of gains, finishing up on Tuesday as investors awaited a speech by Trump on signals for infrastructure spending and tax cuts. We saw some of those promises yesterday in terms of defense spending. Global share markets have risen more than 10% since Mr. Trump won power in November, and investors are hoping a speech to Congress will be even more in terms of pushing the markets higher. Asian stocks mixed today after another strong finish on Wall Street. Investors now hoping that we see more details of the tax cuts, tax reform, infrastructure spending, other business-friendly policies that the president has been touting over recent months, over really the past year or two. On Wall Street yesterday, major U.S. benchmarks notched up a milestone day as the Dow Jones Industrial Average finished higher for the 12th consecutive time as it set a record high. The S&P also closed at a record high. The NASDAQ composite added just a couple of ticks, ending up as well. The dollar slipped against the yen this morning, and the euro benchmark U.S. crude oil remains above $54 a barrel. A couple of big stories you heard in the montage. The Senate has confirmed billionaire investor Wilbur Ross as the next Commerce Secretary. The vote was 72-27, breaking with Republican orthodoxy. Ross says the Trump administration will work quickly to redo the North American Free Trade Agreement. That's the massive trade pact with Canada and Mexico that boosted trade but still stings with laid-off workers across much of the Midwest, where Trump won many states. The senators from both political parties were deferential to Ross at his nearly four-hour confirmation hearing, which was much more subdued than the confirmation hearings for some of the other Trump cabinet secretaries. Also today, the so-called cell phone wars are raging on, much to the delight of some customers. AT&T fired the latest shot yesterday, revealing new unlimited data plans. The unlimited plan gives customers unlimited data, text, and talk for $90 a month, though the company notes it may slow speeds after 22 gigabytes of data usage. Customers also get a $25 credit per month if they sign up for a DirecTV, which AT&T now owns. The second plan, Unlimited Choice, costs $60 a month with a slower speed, but standard-only definition video. Earlier this month, Verizon joined other carriers with an unlimited plan for $80. J.D. Power is out with its most reliable cars, its cars of the year. And the winner is, pull the envelope out here. Dale Buss is with us. He's one of the writers that we bring in regularly from Michigan, where he knows a lot about cars. Dale, you can follow him on Twitter at Dale D. Buss. He's a journalist for Forbes, chief executive and others, a former Wall Street Journal reporter. Dale, good morning. Welcome back to The Opening Bell.
Good Good morning. Now, Steve, are you sure you have the right envelope?
I was going to let you open the envelope, Dale. I didn't want to steal any of your thunder, but there is a car of the year. J.D. Power has picked the Lexus.
Yeah, Lexus, once again, I mean, this happens kind of year after year. They tied for Porsche as a top brand in the vehicle dependability study, which is one of the two big evaluations that J.D. Power does each year. And this is nothing new. I mean, Lexus year after year finishes at the top of this study and many other third-party evaluations of quality, dependability. And that's really its calling card, has been for a long, long time, since, you know, the brand came along in 1989 as the first luxury mark produced by one of the major Japanese auto companies. So that's something you can count on with a Lexus. What they're really trying to pivot now toward is being sexy, believe it or not. They have made a concerted effort under Akio Toyoda, who's the grandson of the founder of Toyota, who's actually a race car driver. He's made a concerted effort to try to make Lexus just a more appealing brand, try to compete more with the sex appeal of the Germans in the luxury segment. And actually, Lexus has two new models coming out this year, which were advertised during the Super Bowl, the LS sedan and a new version of that, and the LC sports coupe, which was supposed to get hearts aflutter. And that's a major emphasis for the brand this year.
We will get into some more of this details about the new Lexus models out there, and we'll talk more about the J.D. Power survey with Dale Buss, who's on with us from Michigan this morning, Car Country, as our pre-dawn business conversation continues here on The Opening Bell.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program, 520. Now we're on with Dale Buss this morning talking about the J.D. Power survey. And Dale, you mentioned earlier that the Lexus, which is the big vehicle dependability car of the year, trying to get sexier. What does that mean?
Well, it means a lot of things. Obviously, the components of an automotive brand are marketing, you know, styling, interior amenities, and lots of intangibles that go into it. I mean, what it means for Lexus really is, for a while, they have been trying to increase the voltage in their advertising and, you know, just make it more appealing. I mean, their average buyer is, the average age of their buyers are baby boomers and even above, which might be kind of surprising when you think of a Japanese luxury car company. But they've been trying to move that lower through marketing. And also, a few years ago, they introduced a line called F, as in Frank, series cars. So these were cars with bigger engines, better performance, better handling, bigger wheels. And so they've been introducing not only F vehicles, but also F or sportier versions of about a half dozen of their models. And then, you know, a lot of it is styling. And the styling of the new cars that are coming out this year, the new version of LS, and also I mentioned the LC sports coupe, are, you know, with sharp creases and more curves and, you know, a larger grill. The signature Lexus spindle grill is much larger on these vehicles. So you put all that together, along with a determination by dealers and brand marketing people to go sexier, and that's what you end up doing.
Yeah, it was interesting to see the president of Toyota talking about this, saying he never wanted to see the words boring and Lexus used in the same sentence ever again. I have to tell you, seeing these cars at the auto show here in Chicago and at the North American auto show over there in Detroit, there's some really good-looking cars. What is the challenge in terms of winning over, though, the younger crowd, the Gen Xers, the millennial buyers who've ignored this brand up until now?
Well, that's just it. I mean, Lexus has not been something that has come to mind for younger buyers by and large for a long, long time. It's a challenge kind of similar to what Cadillac has, where, you know, it's got this great heritage, but it's also got a huge, let's say, installed user base of demographics of, you know, 50 years old and up. So, and the challenge for Lexus is to beat back the Germans, Audi, BMW, Mercedes-Benz, that have all managed to establish themselves, even Mercedes-Benz, with younger buyers to a greater extent, with, you know, by taking that approach of being stylistically more interesting and simply pursuing these demographics much more than Lexus has. So that's a huge challenge. The other challenge, frankly, is that the luxury segment of the U.S. car market is slowing a little bit. It actually lost a little bit of ground in 2016. Might do so again this year. So while the mainstream U.S. auto market it seems to be humming along just about okay on level ground with last year, the luxury segment actually is lost. So things are getting more competitive, not only for Lexus, but for everybody they're competing against.
You talk about the luxury sedan models, but Lexus has actually seen a pretty big bump in the SUV area of this and the coupes too, haven't they?
Well, yeah, SUVs are where all the action is in the U.S. auto industry these days. If you go back, you know, as recently as even 2-3 years ago, SUVs still comprise only about 40% of sales. Now, all of a sudden, in the last 2 years, 2 or 3 years, they've flipped to 60% of sales. And Brian Bolain, the Lexus chief marketing officer, whom I talked with a couple of weeks ago, says he thinks they're on their way to 65%. So basically, 2/3 of their vehicles sold being SUVs, maybe as early as this year. So Lexus was kind of initially in good shape in that area because you may recall about 20 years ago, they led the whole luxury segment by introducing the RX, which is like a midsize SUV, still one of my favorites, and really one of the industry favorites. They came out with a new version of that last year. So they did pretty well, though. They also introduced a model called NX, which is a compact SUV. However, and that's done pretty well as well, but Lexus could still use more SUV models, as really could the whole luxury segment, because this is what Americans are flocking to. As long as gasoline prices are okay, they like the flexibility and the cargo dependability of these vehicles, and so Lexus is positioned pretty well there, but they could do a little bit better.
What is the cost of these vehicles, Dale, and is that something that distracts younger people from thinking about this? Because when I think of Lexus, I think big price tag.
Sure. Well, and you should. I mean, you know, $40,000 and on up. I think the NX, the compact SUV, which is really a really nice vehicle and one that Lexus advertised in the Super Bowl a year ago, can be had for in the 30s. But, yeah, of course that's a problem and a challenge with attracting any millennial buyers. But, you know, if you think of your average millennial now, or the leading edge, let's say, of millennials are 35, 36 these days. They've got some resources, some wherewithal. You know, they may or may not be raising a young family. The economy's, you know, improving somewhat. So Lexus is thinking, okay, this is really where we need to be, appealing to these people. They are the future. So, you know, they really had no choice but to try to go younger.
When we talk about dependability, too, what does that mean? What are the different factors that go into that?
Well, it kind of used to be, you know, does the fender fall off? Do the floorboards rust out? You know, what's the fit and finish like? How does the car look, you know, where the seams are, where the door closes and that kind of thing? Long ago, the U.S. Auto industry has kind of standardized around really high quality levels. I mean, just about every automaker now has very comparable levels of fit and finish and overall actual physical dependability. So it makes it tougher to compete in that area. But there are, and now the whole quality arena has moved inside. You know, how easy is it to use controls? You know, are they touch knobs? Are they knobs or are they touch points on a touch screen? That's become a problem for the auto industry, too, as people try to figure out this connectivity technology. But as far as J.D. Power goes, they ask people to go back 3 years. So what do you think now of the vehicle that you bought 3 years ago? And because Lexus has been doing this so well for so long, they always finish at or near the top. That's just one area of huge consistency for them. So it's not only physically what happens with the car, but how do their customers perceive the quality of the car?
Dale, great conversation. Good to chat with you again. Thanks for being with us.
All right. Thanks, Steve.
Dale Buss is a journalist for Forbes, chief executive. You can follow him on Twitter at Dale D. Buss from Rochester Hills, Michigan this morning.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. UPS says it has successfully tested a drone that autonomously delivers a package to a home. The test happened last week in Florida.
Our drivers represent the brand. They provide the service to our customers. So this drone technology is really about efficiency for our drivers to really give them assistance in those locations where many rural areas, harder to reach locations, where the drivers can be more efficient as they're delivering through these communities and using the drone as an assistant.
John,
it's about efficiency.
John Dodaro is the UPS Vice President of Engineering. He's with us this morning. There's the sound of the video that they provide us of this cool-looking drone launching and delivering a package. John, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell.
Hey, good morning, Steve. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for being with us. This is pretty cool. I'm a big drone fan. This is something that really no other company has done yet. Tell us about exactly what happened last week in Florida and exactly how this drone is going to be used.
Well, you know, what we were doing is we were simulating how we thought this could really work in the real world. And that is a driver would stop at one point when they were making a delivery. The driver would then at the same time load the drone to go make another delivery. You know, think about a triangle. The driver's on one point. The drone's going to then be launched to go over to the top of the triangle while the driver then proceeds after they make a delivery to another delivery point. And they make that delivery, and then the drone comes back and rendezvous with them, landing on top of the truck, all that happening upon us once the driver picks the point to go deliver to.
It seems like a lot of wheels moving at the same time. How do you get it all to do that at once?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of technology involved in the background. We worked with a company called Workhorse, who makes some of our electric package cars. And they also do a lot with this technology, and they've developed a system called the Horsefly drone, and it is all developed by their engineers there at Workhorse, and we integrate it into the vehicle at UPS.
What do you see as the real-world application here? How do you foresee this potentially being used?
Well, I think this is probably one of the use cases for drones that we see in the business. You know, we tested last year in Boston, delivering an urgent medical supply over to an island. We did that 3 miles across the body of water, and then it worked successfully. We were able to deliver an inhaler to a kid's summer camp. But at the same time, we see this here is another application where it can help the driver throughout the day, making the driver more efficient, eliminating some of those extra miles out in the rural areas, going out and delivering these packages while the driver continues along their route.
Is there a potential urban application for this? Because as someone who lives in the city of Chicago, I often get a little frustrated when packages can't be delivered because they can't get through my front gate. This seems like a no-brainer to get this over the gate into my front door.
Well, you know, right now, that really becomes a matter of the FAA regulations and the technology. How does the technology get us to where we can safely do that? You know, that once we can safely integrate through into the urban areas, you know, that's something we would evaluate. Right now, we believe that it's going to be a much easier use case and that the technology will be become, you know, more relevant to be able to do it in those urban areas with less congestion. I mean, that's going to be more of a difficult job to try to get into those urban areas.
Give us a sense about how much money is involved here. I was surprised when I saw your figures in terms of how much it cost per mile for UPS to operate and how that sort of adds up when drivers are driving all over the place.
You know, right now, the total cost of ownership for this is not known to us. Right now, the technology needs to evolve. We need to know, you know, how quickly can it happen. How long will these drones last once we put them into operation? It's really all under evaluation. You know, we know that from our Orion operations that 1 mile for every driver throughout UPS for the year is worth about $50 million. But in terms of this operation, we have to figure out how all it's going to work and what the cost is going to be for the total cost of ownership.
But with that $50 million figure, this has the ability to be some significant cost savings for UPS.
Well, again, it's one of those things that UPS has really had a long history of using technology to improve our overall operations. We want to make everything more efficient. We want to help save money for ourselves and our customers and help them do their business better and more easily and effectively. You know, testing drones fits right in with that longstanding use of technology and our constant focus on innovation. We'll look for ways to continue to become more efficient and make our operations better because UPS really is an engineering company at heart. You know, we invest $1 billion every year in technology, and we'll continue to look for ways to innovate.
John, when you watched this test, what did you see as some of the areas that you thought might need more work? What are the challenges going forward?
Well, you know, the technology is really evolving. I mean, the biggest challenge that we have more than anything is the FAA regulations, right? So we, you know, the FAA does not allow the drones to fly out of line of sight of the pilots. So we had to have spotters and pilots available to take control if necessary in any emergency situation. As the technology evolves, and the technology is evolving at a rapid rate, but as it evolves and gets better and the regulations allow us to implement this type of technology, that's probably the biggest hurdle. You know, there's always ways to continue to make the overall operation better, and we'll look for ways to do that too.
In the opening of the show here, this segment, we heard from one of the senior vice presidents talking about how not only is this going to be out on the streets, but you're using drone technology in the warehouses too, aren't you?
Yeah, we've done some testing right now just to see if it'll work to do inventory control, to do some aircraft inspections. And we've tested quite a few different things. We also were involved with a company called Zipline, and working with Gavi, which is the Global Alliance for Vaccines, and working with them in Rwanda, Africa, to deliver blood supplies. And it's a little different operation there. That's a fixed-wing drone. But we're able to, you know, learn about drones as well as help save lives, because we get emergency blood supplies and vaccines to areas that need them urgently and can't get there sometimes because of washed-out roads and the terrain in Rwanda. And that's another area that we're testing as well.
One of our listeners reacting as we're doing this interview now says if this is not going to work, obviously, with a couch delivery. So there are some limitations in terms of how much packaging, how many pounds one of these things can carry, I would imagine.
Sure. The one that we tested, the Horsefly drone, has a limitation of 10 pounds. And they can, you know, they can fly about a 30-minute flight. But, you know, that 10 pounds is going to be limiting. You're absolutely right. But you know, a lot of these packages are getting smaller as we have moved into this e-commerce age.
You mentioned earlier the FAA regulations on all of this. How big of a hurdle is that going to be to work with the FAA, or has it been so far? And is there seem to be a partnership there, equal concerns about this moving forward?
Well, you know, the FAA last year formed the Drone Advisory Committee, and we were actually the only transportation company that we have a person on that. Our Director of Airline Safety, Captain Houston Mills, is on the Drone Advisory Committee, and, you know, he helps he goes to those meetings, and they're helping to form that legislation to see what's going on, to evaluate how drones are working. We have another gentleman in our Director of Autonomous Systems, Jerome Ferguson. He's actually on one of the subcommittees as well. So we've got involvement with them. We're helping to get information to that committee so that those regulations can be evaluated. But it's, you know, it's something that's going to have to for us and for the FAA as well. It's got to be able to happen safely for the public, for our customers, and for our employees as well.
Well, we're going to tweet out a video here soon, but I have to tell you, this looks pretty cool with the UPS truck that sort of opens up into this flight pad. It almost looks sort of Batman-ish in a UPS way.
Yeah, we're real excited about it. It was a really nice operation that we were able to test and test successfully and get the drone to deliver. You know, it integrates the drone into the UPS truck. The driver, you know, loads it, and we think that it's one very good potential use case.
John Dodaro is the Vice President of Engineering at UPS. John, we appreciate you being with us this morning on the Opening Bell.
Hey, thanks, Steve. Have a great day.
You too. By the way, this morning, UPS on our board trading higher pre-market as we move toward the Opening Bell.
You're listening to the Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. 5:52 on the WGN Associated Bank Market. Dow futures are up 10 points now. S&P and NASDAQ futures still are flat this morning. Crude oil is trading lower. Gold and silver trading lower as well. Let's get the latest on commodity and agriculture now. Here's Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. As we look at yesterday's trade in the grain market, wheat futures down 2% to their lowest level in nearly 3 weeks yesterday, weakening on some technical sales after firming briefly during the overnight trading session. Corn and soybean futures also dropped to multi-week lows, traders noting some end-of-the-month liquidation by investment funds. But both wheat and corn futures notched their third straight session of declines yesterday, Wheat, the biggest decline with benign weather for crop development, bolstering expectations that the upcoming harvest for the winter crop in the Northern Hemisphere will add to an already ample global supply. Meanwhile, live cattle futures reached their highest since late April of 2016 yesterday, driven by short covering amid brisk wholesale beef demand. Speculators bought deferred cattle contracts after Friday's cattle on feed report proved less bearish than some had anticipated. February live cattle expiring today closed $1.62 higher yesterday. Meanwhile, another big meeting this week in San Antonio, Texas. The Commodity Classic will start its session on Thursday and will continue through Saturday. Chairman of the House Agriculture Committee, Michael Conaway, the featured speaker at that event in San Antonio, attracting wheat growers, sorghum growers, corn growers, and soybean growers. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Now the Associated Bank Market Desk outlook for this Tuesday, February 28th, 2017. We'll see the gross domestic product report among several economic reports due out today. The Commerce Department releases the report on GDP. The last 3 months will be surveyed of 2016, the last quarter of last year. In addition, the S&P Case-Shiller Index of home prices for December will be issued, and the Conference Board will release the Consumer Confidence Issue Index for February. Target is out with its quarterly financial results today as well. Just some of the things that could drive the markets on this Tuesday, February 28th, 2017.